This is the Free of Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brain. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it working, Chandler? Can you feel it?
I can feel something.
I think you do. Happy birthday, brother man.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, it's let me just interrupt that with saying that Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink.
I can smell him all the way here.
Yeah, so and I think, yeah, whatever Republican takes his place will probably have the same or similar issues. So it is your birthday, and I just wanted to get that, let people know politically where we stand, although that doesn't really tell you where we stand, but tells you where that we're not with him. We ain't with him. So
we again him.
We again him. So we get that out of the way, and yeah, then we can talk about fun stuff like it's your birthday and technology. And I guess we got to mention, this isn't fun stuff, but the what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri. But
yeah,
which makes me glad I'm not in a major city tonight. You know, I was looking at this link baity site of the top 10 most dangerous cities in America. And the thing is, like, really, if you want the stats on this, you just go to the FBI. That's one thing the government's good for. And I think those stats are probably accurate, unlike some government stats. But no cities on Wyoming where I live, or Maine where you live, are on the top most dangerous city sites.
Yay.
I think my biggest danger here is getting eaten by a bear. And I think your biggest danger there is getting eaten by a bear or beat up by a cop.
Yeah, that's definitely one of them.
Why is that?
Well, in Maine, like many other states, the police are definitely more militarized
than they used to be.
And yeah, and you see it. I remember, must have been about 6-7 months ago, there was an article on the front page of the local newspaper, and it showed a picture of a couple of cops walking around an area I knew right in my town, carrying MP5s, and they were looking for a man that was supposedly carrying a gun. The guy didn't make any threats or anything, but, you know, people got suspicious. And
was he like just open carrying, or was he like walking around holding a rifle at the ready or something?
Nah, he was walking around holding a handgun at the ready, and it was in a seedier part of town. So I guess that was cause for concern. But
who knows, too? Like, you know, maybe he got mugged. And there was some, you know, his family member got mugged, and he was out, you know, trying to get his property back and had his gun out because he didn't want to get shot or something.
Yeah, it could very well be. And the story in the newspaper, they didn't specify, you know, and I know in that part of town, it's Maine. So it's not like we're talking Detroit here or anything. But in that part of town, there can be some challenging folks, let's put it that way. So, you know, you never know. But it just disgusted me seeing cops walking around with MP5s. By the way, you or I couldn't walk around with MP5s. I don't even think we can own them because they're automatic weapons.
You can own a semi-auto variant of them, but an MP5 is a really disgusting weapon for a police officer to have, and here's why. And if people don't know, an MP5 is a 9mm machine pistol. Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. It's They're used by the Army. They're used by SWAT teams. They're used by, you know, British Armed Forces. They're used by Israeli Defense Forces.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, well, that's a German gun, though, I think.
But I thought they used the Uzi, and that the MP5 was like the equivalent of the Uzi for other nations who didn't want the gangster association that the Uzi has come to have.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've all kind of switched over. It's become the general weapon of choice by police forces.
Here's why an MP5 is a disgusting weapon for a government person to have, or a government agent to have, or a police officer, or anybody like that. It's spray and pray. There's like no targeting an individual with it. You know, it's basically for crowd control by murder. You know, that's the idea for it. I mean, I guess there are places where it would be legitimate to use in deadly force. You know, legitimate, I'm not talking legal, because cops can almost shoot anyone they want these days and get away with it, as we've seen tonight. And
yeah,
I don't know the ups and downs in that case. You know, I'm not going to say the guy was a saint. I'm not going to say the cop was a horrible person. I don't know.
But there's very little accountability when it comes to police shootings.
Yeah,
they protect their own.
The fact that a grand jury said nope, he's not going to get a trial. You know, that's suspect there. First of all, like, it's different for state grand juries, but with federal grand juries, which this was not. I mean, it's something like 9 times out of 100,000, you know, they don't say, yeah, indict. It's not quite that high with state grand juries, but it's pretty high. The thing about grand juries too is the juries are impaneled for like 6 months or 9 months and hear like 10 cases. So grand juries are almost entirely made up of retired people because, you know, someone with a job can't take 6 or 9 months off. So, you know, it's older people that are scared and feel dependent on the government. Not saying all older people are like that. And I'm not ageist. I'm 50 and you turned 30. How old did you turn today?
I don't know, man. 30 something. I think 37 maybe.
I remember when I was like, you know, 9 or something. I asked my sister, how old are you? And she was like, she was counting in her head, like kind of like her lips moving, but not talking. I was like, and she said, I'm 21. And I'm like, you don't know how old you are. And it blew my mind. But yeah, as I get older, I care less and less or know less and less without doing math what my exact age is. But I'm 50 now and I'm very aware of it. When someone asks me how old are you, I'm like, 50. I'm 50. Yep, I'm 50. Because it sounds like such a horrifying age to me that I don't forget it. You know, next
isn't that one of the milestones? You know, you've got like 21 and... Well, then 50.
I had ones that seemed really weird to me. Like, you know, I guess 25 seemed interesting to me, but 27 seemed really interesting to me. And that was before there was a thing of the 27 club of like that, you know, rock stars, rock musicians all die. A lot of them die at 27. And I was a rock musician at the time. I think it was like, okay, when I was 25, it seemed young still, and 30 seemed old to me and 27 seemed halfway between them. So I was like, I'm halfway to old. And there was actually a band in DC, punk band that I used to like that, I think it was a band, it might've been United Mutations or one of the bands was a spinoff on them that had a song called Halfway to 50 about turning 25. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. I don't remember too many of them. I remember the 29th birthday because I had a party in my dad's garage and all my friends showed up. It was like my first real, I guess, birthday party. And I consumed way too many beverages. And at 12 midnight, I was done. But the rest of the night was really fun. But that was my 29th birthday. It was like no milestone. You know, you'd think of like 25, 30, whatever. But and since then, my birthdays have been really mellow. I think last year, I had a steak and watched a movie and called it good. And you know, tonight I'm going to have dinner with my father and my kid. And, you know, it'll be all good. And right now I'm doing The Fiends, which, you know, it was funny because we were scheduling shows and I didn't even think of it. And then like last week I looked and I saw my notification that I had to do The Fiends with you tonight. And I was like, oh, that's on my birthday. That's perfect. I love it.
Very cool. Yeah. And I wasn't supposed to do a show last night. It was Derek J's night, but he said he had a flu. He sounded darn good on Free Talk Live tonight, though. But I'm not saying I need a note from a voluntarist doctor there, Derek J. But you sounded really like you didn't sound today like you had a flu last night. Put it that way.
He was playing hooky.
Yeah. Just, you know, if you're playing hooky, just tell me. You can play hooky. You can play hooky at an unpaid job. Oh, speaking of unpaid, the fact that the Freedom Fiends give away most of our ad space and don't make much money and survive through donations.
I have a bill coming up for $207 next week for the streaming feed for the Freedom Fiends, which is when you go to the Freedom Fiends site, freedomfiends.com, over on the left, there's a picture of a pretty girl with a free Freedom Fiends t-shirt on, and it says, listen 24/7. And when you click on her, a feed comes up, good sounding feed, that's a random loop of every episode we've ever done, all 500 and something episodes, plus, you know, a bunch of music I do with Nima Vidati, et cetera. So that costs $207 a year, and it's due once a year, and it's due next week. So if you haven't donated ever or in a while, or if you use the streaming link, or if you don't and you just want to help Liberty out, send us a little donation via PayPal or Bitcoin at freedomfiends.com. Click on the spinning coin on any post. So moving along. Go ahead.
Do you take donations of silver? Can somebody just mail you a silver coin?
People can. I don't like to put my post office box address, like, you know, I don't put my physical address out there, but I don't even put my post office address out there because if somebody wrote me and said, I'm going to send you X amount of silver, and I believe them, I would give them my P.O. box. There is a contact link on the left side of the Freedom Fiends, and you can contact us there. But yeah, the thing is with silver, it's like, you weren't going to send me any silver, huh? Don't send me silver.
No. Okay.
Okay. Were you going to? No, man. Keep it for yourself. I don't want donations from the co-hosts. Keep your money, man. Now, the thing with silver is like, okay, sending me silver is I check my P.O. box about once a month. First of all, like, sending silver costs a lot of money, and it tends to get stolen. I've had silver stolen by the U.S. mail, and it was not insured. And even if it is insured, it takes, you know, three to six months to get your money back, and you have to wait in line at the post office. So, yeah. You know, if someone wants to donate enough silver to make it worth my while, I'll give them my P.O. box. But, if someone wants to send me an ounce of silver, just keep it and send me $5 instead of $15 or something. You'd actually be doing them more of a favor because with
is silver down that much now,
I think let's check it. But silver, no, it's not down. It's on sale. That's how I look at it. But,
yeah.
But, you know, I mean, this week, if someone sent me silver, I'd go sell it to the silver store so I could pay my streaming fee. And it's not like if I don't get donations on this, it's going to go away. It just means I'm going to pay it out of my pocket, which I'm willing to do. But I like to ask for money for a particular thing. So there you go, man.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Now that the elections are over and Liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Freedom Fiends. Yeah.
Worms.
Yeah. Back off your mic there a little bit, brother man, when you get loud. This is a teaching hospital, so we point that stuff out. And let's see, it's Freedom Fiends. Silver, the gold price right now is $1,198. The Bitcoin price is $381, and the silver price is $16.40.
Wow, so everything's on sale.
Yeah, well, Bitcoin's been pretty steady at, you know, between 350 and 400 for some time now. It went down a lot, and it's been up to 1,000 per Bitcoin. The digital currency, it's kind of like gold you can email. Yep. I got a couple announcements to make. One is regarding the whole parking meter gate. Now, the whole Colbert Report thing about, the parking meter people. This guy, Andrew Trenzdel, I don't know how to say this, T-R-Z-N-A-D-E-L, wrote us and said, the whole situation reminds me of that Bob Dylan line from Subterranean Homesick Blues. Don't follow leaders, watch your parking meters. I like that.
Yeah,
I'm a fan of that song. I'm surprised no one's made the connection there, but it kind of fits the story because I've been saying that all week. Like, you know, don't make rock stars out of people. No one person is big enough to sink Liberty. No one person should be who you go to for everything, and parking meters. So it was basically this, the Colbert Report did this thing about some people in Keene, New Hampshire, doing activism where they put nickels in parking meters, which I think is hilarious and good. And they also hassle parking meter ladies and men. And I don't think that's so good. And I don't think that's going to win any hearts and minds. But who am I? I'm nobody. I'm just a guy with a microphone. So, but yeah, people are really upset. Some people are really upset in the Liberty community. And Ian Freeman made a comment that Ian Freeman of Free Talk Live, our sister show, brother show on Liberty Radio Network and Genesis Communication Network. And Ian also runs Liberty Radio Network, a streaming only network. We're on radio, us and his show Free Talk Live are on radio through GCN, Genesis Communications Network. I misunderstood something Ian said. There was a thread on a non-public Free Talk Live, the Free Talk Live AMP page. And, you know, it's one of those things, this happens a lot on the internet, and this is why I prefer one-on-one communication generally to forums and things. Or even in forums, like, you know, there's the ability to easily quote a person and then reply to it. But on Facebook, it's just you type some words and you hit reply. And when there's a thread going on a topic and three or four or five or seven people commenting on it and people taking a while to get back and comment on it, you know, sometimes you'll say, like, you know, how do you really feel that way about X, you know, or Y? And the person will come back and like a bunch of stuff has come in since then. And the person will say, yes, I absolutely feel that way. And you'll think they were talking about one thing, but they were talking about another thing. So last night, I was mistaken. I said that Ian Freeman said that, and his quote was, they're just a bunch of intellectual wusses hiding behind their keyboards. Keen activists have more bravado in their pinky fingers than the rest of these folks. And I thought he was talking about Jim Jesus and myself and Daryl Perry, who made, and a few other people's, and especially people, and especially Jim Jesus, who made the board game Libertarians Against Humanity. He was not. He was talking about the people who were saying that the Colbert Report piece was harming liberty. So I was wrong. And I do that episode every few shows. I say what I was wrong about. And it's usually not something as major as that. It's usually like, you know, I said the Cambrian period when I meant the, you know, some other period in ancient prehistory history. So that is my correction for the day. So where do you want to go, brother man?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I've been listening to the Fiends all week, and I guess I'm an anomaly in the Liberty Mission because I don't follow a lot of this stuff. Like he who shall not be named, I've never actually listened to.
Oh, I'm calling him Cheddar Bob now. I'm calling Cantwell Cheddar Bob after the character in the movie 8 Mile who brandishes a gun and then shoots himself in the foot, because Cheddar Bob, Chris Cantwell's gun handling is so unsafe on camera while he thinks he's being a total cowboy that he should be called Cheddar Bob. So I'm calling and I don't like to say his name, Chris Cantwell, on the air because I consider it a cuss word. And I've said many times that if anyone uses it on my show, I'm going to beep them as if they said the F word. It's a cuss word on the shows, but it is acceptable now and more accurate than calling him he who cannot be named to call him Cheddar Bob. So go ahead and call him Cheddar Bob.
So, yeah, I've never actually watched or heard or read anything by Cheddar Bob. I know there was a big to-do at Porkfest.
So what are you saying? Go ahead, real quick.
I just kind of tune out from all that
You're
stuff.
Living liberty. You're up in the woods living liberty, man. You don't have to be on the interwebs having all the drama. You're really doing it. You're not in your mother's basement. You're living. Trying. You're in your house, man.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily wrestle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience dropping blood pressure or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and with Birthday Boy, Chandler St. Pierre. So you wanted to tell me there's a new segment here and it's called You Were Wrong. So go ahead and tell me, say it and then tell me.
So you were wrong.
Thank you.
you were making a Simpsons reference, which I always keep an eye on because I'm an avid Simpsons fan, the older Simpsons. And you were talking about how Mr. Burns made Smithers dance around drunk for his entertainment while they were trapped in a cavern under an avalanche. And you weren't wrong. You just got a couple of episodes.
I got the
confused.
Location wrong.
Yes. Well, the avalanche being trapped in the cabin was Mr. Burns and Homer. Ah. And the Mr. Burns and asking Smithers to dance around drunk for his entertainment was on his train car. And that's when he met his son, who was played by Rodney Dangerfield, who says, "I can't get no regard, no regard at all."
Yep. Yep. Instead, yeah. I can't get no respect. Yeah. I thought it was funny, too, in the episode where they're trapped in the cabin where, you know, they're starting to go get cabin fever and go crazy and want to kill each other. And one of them says, "You better do this." And the other one says, "Yeah, you and what army?"
And the snowmen come alive.
Yeah, army. It's, they hallucinate each of the other ones having an army. And it's Homer has an army of snowmen. And Mr. Burns has an army of like Prussian soldiers from the 1850s or something, yeah. Which, you know, yep. Because he's that old. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, we're going to talk about activism.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the kind of activism that nobody in Liberty could possibly say, "You're harming the movement."
Exactly. So we all know the story of Arnold Albert, the Arnold Albert.
We don't all know the story, so go ahead and tell it.
I'm going to recap the story. There's a 90-year-old war vet and a minister named Arnold Abbott.
What war is he a vet of?
Well, I believe it is World War II. It doesn't specify in here, but I'm pretty sure it's World War II.
Yeah, I think it would be with his age.
Yeah. So,
aren't many of those guys still around, actually?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you there's know, very few.
My dad's 93, but he was upset that he didn't get to fight in World War II. He wanted to, but they wouldn't let him because he was a farmer. And the government said, "Nope, you're going to stay here and make milk and beef."
Yep.
For the troops. Yeah.
Yeah, so this gentleman has been defying a city ordinance in Fort Lauderdale,
Florida.
And he's been feeding homeless people, and not just homeless people, mentally ill, downtrodden, you know, anyone who needs help.
You know, there's a Twitter column that I talked about with MK Lords the other day, and she lives in Florida, and she loves this Twitter feed called Florida Man.
Florida Man.
And it's all headlines of that start with Florida Man, like Florida Man loses toe to gator in bar bet. You know, it's like all the ridiculous stuff. But this would be kind of a redeeming Florida Man story. Florida Man feeds homeless despite police orders. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's actually been arrested twice, and he's publicly stated that he's going to keep doing it and he'll keep getting arrested. So there's a group, they are called Planting for Peace, and they have upped the ante. And to show solidarity with this gentleman, they are going to create a mobile food bank to go around, and they specifically state that they want to feed homeless people, mentally ill people, people who are just down on their luck because the government is totally destroying the local economy.
And, you know, I'll say this. I've heard a lot of negative comments before this guy even about people who feed the homeless. Now, I'm absolutely against government programs to feed people. However, if we wanted to strip the government down and sell it for parts and have a libertarian paradise, I would say that any kind of like street outreach feeding the truly needy would be about one of the last things I'd scrap before everything gets, given to the private market, and they'd get taken care of better in the private sector without the government, and everyone would be 8 times as wealthy. So people would want to give money to people who are less fortunate. And a lot of people who are there's a lot of people on welfare who, not everybody, but there are people on welfare. They're like, "I don't want to work," you know, so they're on welfare. But there are a lot of people that are on welfare, but especially like homeless or eating in soup kitchens. They're not there by choice.
Yes.
I actually was homeless by choice for about 7 months. When I was 19, I was like, "I'm out of my square little town. I'm going to go live in Washington, D.C. And I was homeless. I was homeless and had a job, which is kind of rare. Like I was working making sandwiches in a health food restaurant, and like, you know, would wake up every morning and put on my tie in the rear view, you know, in the rear view mirror of a parked car on the street, and then comb my hair with a pocket comb and wash my hands in the mop sink and they go serve sandwiches. So, nah, I'd use the real sink, but, I wash my hair a few times in the mop sink, but after hours, but people who are truly, you know, homeless and like eating in soup kitchens, if that's done by the private sector, you know, by churches or by, you know, non-religious groups, whatever, community groups, I've actually heard people criticize that kind of stuff. Now, I can see people saying, not in my backyard, because they don't want, you know, a line of homeless people queuing up, you know, in front of their rose bushes. I can kind of get that.
See, I can't get that, man, because I'm going to tell you, we see, and this is very rare. It's a rather new trend in Maine, but on the rotaries, the busy part of my town, we see people, you know, holding up signs, homeless vet, anything helps, yada, yada, yada. And you feel bad for them. And, you know, you don't want to give money. You want to tend to give food or something of usefulness, because there's the old adage that, oh, they're all just drunks. And, you know, if you give them money, they're going to go and buy alcohol, which is a generalizing, sweeping statement. But anyway, but I got to tell you, if somebody came up to me and said, hey, you know, we need a private residence to set up like a little food line and to feed needy people, I have a huge backyard and I would be all for it. I'd be like, you know what?
Cool.
You can use my whole backyard, set it right up, and we'll have a line around the corner. Well, I wouldn't even care.
Well, you're a better man than I. So I have volunteered at soup kitchens, though. I used to eat at and then have volunteered at Food Not Bombs in San Francisco when I lived there, when I was less fortunate than I am now, or, you know, just really didn't have my act together. And I blame the government.
And you should, because the government creates a demand and creates a necessity for people to be homeless. And I'll tell you why. Because in the field that I work in, I work with individuals with developmental disabilities and a lot of people with mental illness. There is no assistance available immediately unless they are homeless. So what they basically tell these folks is, look, you go out and live on the street and tell your local DHHS representative that you're homeless and you have nothing, and you'll get assistance quicker. So they don't encourage people to go out and better themselves. They encourage people to worsen their situations so that they can get government funds.
And that's kind of how bureaucracies always work. Let me finish what I was saying, though, because you left me sounding like a bad man. And I want to finish and say that I'm not. Anybody who thinks that private organizations should not feed the homeless is mentally ill. Anybody who thinks like, oh, those police are good to be arresting those people for feeding those bums, that is mental illness. That is something, there's something wrong with that. And, you know, the thing is, it's pretty easy to, I've heard a lot of people say stuff like that. It's kind of mind blowing to me. And the thing is, the economy's getting worse to the point where it used to be that a lot of working people didn't know anybody was homeless, or that maybe they had a third cousin or something who's been homeless sometimes, but, you know, that guy's a ne'er-do-well and I don't like him kind of stuff. But it's getting to the point now where most people in the middle class or the lower middle class know somebody, have a family member or a friend or something who's fallen on hard times that are like completely out of their control, you know? Yeah. And most of my life, I have literally lived one or two paychecks away from the street. And, you know, I'm bunch more paychecks away from the street now, but, you know, not that far. You know, if something horrible happened, like, you know, let's say, I don't even want to conjecture, but, you know, an illness or something, and that, you know, insurance didn't cover, or, you know, somebody being arrested for something they didn't do and being incarcerated for a long period of time. I mean, you know,
doesn't take much now.
I'm not more than 6 months away from the street. Yeah. That's for sure.
Oh. You're doing a lot better than a lot of us, I got to tell you, man.
But I've worked my whole life, and, you know, my wife and I have both separately and together worked our whole life to, you know, be a little further, a few more paychecks away from the street. And it's it takes a lot of work, man, because the government is in your way at every turn.
They are. So, you know, I don't see, and I think the attitude is changing, I don't see how a man like this or this group planting for peace could get so much flack for helping the downtrodden. Now, I have an uncle, and he is actually the gentleman that did my handgun safety class for me to get my concealed carry permit. He has a private business called Protection Associates. And he just ran for a local district, I can't remember, 74 or something in Maine, for the state Congress. And I said to him, I said, Uncle Gary, why are you running for office? You're such a good man.
That's no, funny because like the rest of your family, most people are probably like, oh, he's so admirable. He's running for office.
Yes. He's got so many, you know, kudos and everyone's proud. And I'm proud of him, you know, because he does want to do good in the world. But I said, you know, why are you doing that? Because you're a successful businessman. This is a guy who started with nothing and he owned a bottle redemption center. He's owned several fast food chains. He's done really well for himself. He's very business savvy and ethically business savvy. You know, he takes care of his own. Very, very good man. He's taught me a lot about hunting and gun safety and gun handling. Just all around great guy. So I said to him, you know, why are you running? Why are you running for office? And he knows what my political stance is. And he said to me, well, you know, I've spent so much of my life complaining and railing against the state and what needs to change that I figured I might as well walk the walk and actually run and do something. And I said, well, you know, that's admirable that you want to walk your talk and change. But I think that your economic and community outreach is far more effective at affecting change in your local community than running for office. I said, I'm going to make a prediction for you that you're going to get into office and you're going to try really hard to do good. You know, you'll sponsor bills or whatever they do. And you're going to get very frustrated because you're going to see the political graft and corruption and cronyism, even that exists on the state level.
Oh, I think a lot more of it exists at the state level in some cases, because that's where, I don't know, it's hard to say. I just know more about the state level. Like, you know, who would build the roads without the government? People that don't give it to the highest bidder who are their third cousin's wife's barber.
Exactly. You know? And I think that's the stuff you'd run into. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone proof.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Hey, this is Squisscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And, because it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends. Do it again. Yeah.
Yep. I'm looking for the lyrics to this song by this band, MDC, which was an old punk band from the 80s that the name stood for Millions of Dead Cops. And that's a, yeah. See, these kids today, like Cheddar Bob going on and on with their theories. Like, you know, when they were, I guess 30, I'm 20, 20, 20. When those people were in diapers, I was like, you know, hanging out with lefty socialist, you know, anarcho-communists who were singing songs about all the police must die. So it's like, I don't agree with that at all, but I'm saying like, that's what the kind of stuff I used to listen to. And, or not only used to listen to, like I sing backup on an MDC song on one of their records, in, you know, the year you saw it, what was it? 86. When did you see Star Wars?
82.
Yeah. I saw Star Wars when it came out, the year you were born, and I may have been high when I saw it.
Yeah.
You know, and people get upset because they say, you know, when I joke about like, or when I say with all sincerity that I think, you know, true liberty means that you'd be able to buy any drug you want or any weapon you want in a vending machine as long as the vending machine was privately owned and operated. And people say, but children would take drugs. I took drugs as a kid, and I am a successful radio star. I'm not saying that was my path, but I'm saying like, you know, if you smoke a little dope before you're of legal age to go die in a war, you know,
or drink alcohol,
you know, it doesn't mean you're doomed for life is what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, obviously I think many of us could say we've had our past with that sort of thing in our younger years. And we obviously, I don't want to say smartened up, but, we made something, you know,
my older sister told me something around that time. It's an old hippie saying that really rang true with me. It's, when you get the message, you hang up the phone.
Yeah.
I think it was Wavy Gravy who said that. So,
and that totally makes sense. You know, it's like I've told my kid, more than once, I've had the drug talk with my kid and she knows where I stand on drugs. I don't take them anymore. And I hope that she doesn't. But,
so
you
where
know,
you stand on drugs is where most parents stand on drugs, which is when I was your age, I did them and I turned out fine, but I don't want you to do them.
Well, no. What I've told my kid is, look, my only as far as marijuana, because she says, Dad, you know, a lot of my friends do marijuana in school. And she's, you know, she's so square like me. She calls it marijuana.
Man, the pots. The kids are smoking the pots, yeah. Dad.
Yeah. And she asked me about it. And I'm like, look, you know, you're a young lady and you're going to be exposed to that. She said, I said to her, I would just ask that if you decide someday that you want to try that sort of thing or drink or any of that, please wait till you're an adult and not because your decision-making skills will be better. It's more from a physiological perspective. Your body is still developing. And I know what, as brilliant as I am, I know that had I not done drugs when I was a teenager, my intelligence would have been less stunted and I would have been even more brilliant.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, when your body's developing, you don't want to stunt its growth with any sort of drug.
Well, I'm 5'5", so and I'm the shortest person in my family. My dad's 5'7" or 5'8", and he's pretty short for a man. So maybe whatever I did would stunt my growth, but I think it was smoking cigarettes when I was a teenager that stunted my growth.
Yeah, well, I think that'll do it too. And that's one thing. It's funny because I would rail against her more for smoking cigarettes than smoking pot. And she kind of confused her once. And I was like, look, I don't smoke pot anymore. And I still smoke cigarettes because I'm still addicted. I said, it's one of the worst.
I'm vaping, man. You should get off cigarettes and start vaping. I mean, the nicotine will still give you a heart attack by the time you're 90. But, you know, it's not going to give you the cancer. And it doesn't decrease your wind function as much as smoking.
That's
it's cheaper
true.
Too, man. You're on a budget. It's way cheaper. It's a little more for the startup, but it's. I could send you some vape if you want.
Oh, dude, I vape. I've got a whole thing. You know, you saw me at Porkfest. You know. Yeah.
So I gotta say, Freedom Fiends is the new kind of general interest radio show. General interest talk radio usually means they'll talk a little about politics and they'll talk a little about football. Our idea of general interest is we will quote both hippie Wavy Gravy named Wavy Gravy. And talk about the band Millions of Dead Cops in the same segment. That's what we call general interest here.
Oh, the fans are lucky tonight because I was on tear earlier politics.
You were. And we'll come back with hour two and talk about technology and how it's changed since the year of Chandler's birth and the year of my birth and how we embrace it and love it and just lick it. We just lick technology. We just nuzzle up. We French kiss technology, man.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back.
Worms.
Over this technology when we get back for this trip to the market.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com.
Yeah. It's Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend.
Worms.
Worms. Yeah. So we were looking for some punk rock to play, but we're not going to play any punk rock tonight because any of the punk rock we'd want to play, we actually, first of all,
it's scare people.
It's not radio friendly. Second of all, like if you play the band MDC, Millions of Dead Cops from 1982, who were my upstairs neighbors at 191 Landers Street in San Francisco, which was a notorious house called the Rat House. They weren't rats. They didn't snitch on people. It was called the Rat House because the house had rats. It was actually named after the Rathaus in Germany. That means like where the mayor lives is the Rathaus, ironically or not ironically. It's ironic.
Very apt.
Yeah, it's aptly. There you go. But the Rat House was me and little Mike downstairs, and it was Dave Dichter from MDC upstairs. And we hung out a lot. And I was in a band called Bomb that lived downstairs, I lived downstairs, and he let people spray paint on his walls and paint on his ceilings and stuff. And one time I took some paint and climbed up on his kitchen ceiling and wrote, "Money for Bomb, not for bombs." You know, awesome. Saying my band deserves funding, not murder, the murder machine of the military industrial complex. And that was about the extent of my political ideology back then. But it made sense to me. Don't give money to murderers. Give money to me. But and that stayed up there for about 10 years. And there's actually also a... I don't want to talk about the other graffiti
interesting.
That someone I know did that we used on a record cover, because somebody might say that record cover is proof of a crime. So that Bomb record cover with the stencil on the corner of Dolores and 16th on some government property. I didn't do it. I just took a picture of it. Yeah, well, there's a record cover. My band Bomb had a best of. It was on vinyl and cassette, I think. Called Lucy
called, what is that?
What is that? Yeah, speaking of technology, record was called Lucy in the Sky with Desi. And the cover was a picture of a naked lady on a bomb, which was actually something that the artist who made the stencil, it was spray painted on his dad's bomber plane in World War II. So if you think you can't talk about pictures of naked ladies on here, no, it's okay. It was on a military airplane by the U.S. government, so it's okay. So
that makes it all right. Yeah.
That does to a lot of people. So, that was the cover of our Bomb, was the band. The record was Lucy in the Sky with Desi. And it was on Rough Trade Records. Boner Records and Rough Trade Records. It was a split release. It was a release between two labels. And that was the cover was somebody I knew stenciled that on a electrical pole, like a metal pole, you know, that holds up like city lights kind of thing. And they spray painted on there, and it was really cool. It looked really cool because there were like rivets along the side of that thing, so it looked very industrial. And this was before there was, you know, before any industrial music anyone's heard of. There was like Skinny Puppy and KMFDM maybe, but maybe not even KMFDM. But so yeah, we took a picture of that. And it was on the cover of that. And I got to say, like, here's something about technology. Like what it took to do art back then was a lot more muscular than what it takes to do art now. Like, you know, now if someone wanted to do that, they would probably take a picture of the piece of metal and then like, you know,
open it in Photoshop
and like make it look like someone spray painted on it. You know, someone actually had to go spray paint it on there. And then, okay, I took a picture of it like you know, I used a cheap camera. I used like a disposable camera. Nah, I don't even know if they had disposable cameras in, did they?
I don't think so. Not back then.
No, but I do know that I took the film to the drugstore to get developed. And no, it was actually, let me think about that. I used to do that with film, but we were on a deadline. So I took it to like a professional photo processing place that wasn't just, it wasn't just like a 1 hour photo place. It was like 1 hour photo place, you know, for like corporations, you know, people doing like layout for magazines. So they did a really good job with it, but it was like $70 in 1986 to get that roll of film developed and printed. And then we had to like take it somewhere and get the picture processed for pre-press, for layout, which now just means like, you know, you do it in Photoshop. You separate it into four separate layers and send it to the printer. And most people don't even do that. They just do it RGB and then send the flattened image to the to the printer, and they figure it out and make it RGB as best they can. But we actually had to like pay, it was something like $275 to get four full-size color, you know, like CMYK films of this, you know, record size, like, right, you know, and then give those to the printer. That's how you made records back then, man.
Yeah. Well, I remember like, and I know talking to the younger audience, they probably don't even grasp this concept, but I remember going to concerts and, you know, I'd have a camera and take rolls and rolls of pictures. That was my big thing. And, you know, get back that night or the next day and go to the 1 hour Photoshop and have them do it in 1 hour and pay like twice the price because I had to have those pictures right then, you know. And if I didn't have the money, I'd have to wait like 3 or 4 days. Yep. And, you know, now we've got digital cameras that have so much better resolution than the cameras we had back then. And it's instantaneous. You know, it's on your computer as soon as you want.
And shared with the world. And I'm not at all saying, you gosh darn kids, you didn't suffer like I did. I'm just saying, like, isn't it interesting of what led up to the technologies we have now? And, you know, I mean, some of it was spinoffs of military and space technology, but a lot of it was private industry, man. And a lot of it too was like not only private industry, but like people working in their garage, financing things, you know, by like mortgaging their house and things like that.
Yep. As a side note, I'm going to start a band called Glorified Cat Pillow because that's all I am. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah. I'm a cat doorman. That is my role on life. We have an indoor outdoor cat. And I, you know, she's rain or shine. She's, well, usually rain and shine. She's knocking at the back door, but she literally knocks at the door. Like she will, you know, there's a door and then there's a screen door and she will come and stand up on her, and she's like 16, but she's still pretty sprightly. She'll stand up on her back legs and put her front legs on the screen and like do push-ups on it. And it sounds, the first time she did it, because our old house didn't have the screen door, the first time she did it here, I grabbed a gun because it was late at night and I thought it was a drunk person that, you know, we didn't know anybody here when we moved here. And I'm like, who the heck is incessantly banging on our door at, you know, 1:30 in the morning?
Yeah. I don't know, man. My cat, he's 10. He's an old curmudgeon like me. He's kind of just sitting on my printer right now, staring at me. He's like, fine, you kick me off your lap. I see how it is.
Yeah. I think the picture I'm going to use tonight is going to be a Crazy Rich picture. The picture for the podcast archive that he made of like Airworm One, which was Nima Vedati's joke for, you know, we used to like, we always say we're at different locations. Lately, I'm saying we're broadcasting from outer space, but.
Which would be nice.
Which would be nice. Yeah. So away from this government, but, Nima used to say I was broadcasting from Airworm One, which was a takeoff on the president's plane. Air Force One. Airworm One is a fictitious blimp, but he made a picture of a Crazy Rich made a picture of a blimp that looks like a cat. And so it's like Air Cat One or something. Yeah. So
that's great.
So Barack Obama is a liar and he's a socialist and his feet stink. And we were going to talk about. We're not going to talk about it much, but we're going to talk about this band MDC that I used to be neighbors with and friends with in San Francisco. And I tried to find some of their music that I could play on the air and it just doesn't exist, man.
They were that great.
They were that great. Yeah. I mean, they were a band that literally like the name of that band was more threatening and more seditious than like the whole output of whole bands now, or even like whole feisty bloggers, you know, like This band was called Millions of Dead Cops, and they got detained for 5 days by Canadian customs going from US to Canada one time. And they got all of their records confiscated, and they arrested one of the band members for carrying a weapon. He wasn't carrying a weapon. He was carrying a spiked arm bracelet, like was the style in the day. You know, and it wasn't even the kind with the sharp spikes on it. They wanted to get him for something because they didn't like, you know, the name of the band, MDC. And they stole all their records and they stole a bunch of their t-shirts and they put their drummer in jail for 5 days. And their drummer was a Jewish guy named Al, whose stage name was Al Schwitz. they were zany people, man. They actually played one time on their roof when the Pope came to town and the Pope was appearing across the street at Mission Dolores Church.
In the little Pope mobile?
Yeah, he was in the Pope mobile and there were, you know, 200,000 people in the streets or something. And MDC went up on their roof and played. And the police, you know, and they locked their doors and the police broke down the doors and went up and stopped them from playing, unplugged their stuff, did not arrest them, but took all their equipment. They got it back a couple days later, but it was really funny.
Pretty hardcore.
Yeah. Somebody took pictures of them, of the police in uniform, carrying MDC's amplifiers down the stairs to confiscate them. And it was pretty funny because somebody sent that picture into Maximum Rock and Roll magazine, which was kind of like the Rolling Stone of hardcore punk rock back then. And they published a picture of these cops carrying the amps and the amps have like MDC stenciled on the side of them. And the caption was MDC's new roadies.
So what was the legal justification for the cops doing that?
Because they could.
Yeah.
You got to understand that San Francisco Police Department are almost as scary as the LAPD. And sometimes they're scarier because they live in the shadow of LAPD. And, you know, people are like, oh, San Francisco, you must be really scary cops, you know, like
they're trying to outdo LA, make,
you know, effeminate jokes at them and stuff. And so they're kind of trying to outdo LA. The horrible things have happened in the past and probably who knows what's happening there tonight. I'll look it up while we talk about technology. So, yeah, man, I'm glad I don't live in a major city right now. I've lived in a lot of them in my life. And I've lived in LA. Like, people riot there when, like, the Lakers win or lose a game. I can't imagine what's going on there in the street tonight. I'd be kind of scared. Well,
I never understood that either. Like, even up in the Northeast, Boston, you know, when
DC,
the big
DC does when, it too.
Yeah, when like the Red Sox, that's the baseball team, right? I don't know, man.
Sounds right. Sure.
So yeah, or
all I know about baseball is like program directors don't want to talk to me about putting our show on during baseball season generally.
Yeah. Well, I remember with talk radio football season used to cut into it too, but
yeah, that too.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like the Patriots and the Red Sox when they win, people riot in the streets and I'm like, "Really?" It boggles my mind. I mean, I guess if you like that sort of thing, it's cool to celebrate their victory, but why would you riot and, you know, turn over cars and set trash cans on fire? Well,
there's a Dead Kennedy song about that. It's called Riot, and it says, burn your own neighborhood to the ground is one of the lines in it. So
it seems very foolish to me.
It does too, to me. Burning anything to the ground seems foolish, but especially your own neighborhood and, you know, innocent people who had nothing to do with whatever you're upset about. Worms.
Or happy about.
Or they're happy about, yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
So various police officers and private citizens around America are rioting, and we're not going to talk about it. And that's not our, we're going to talk about technology instead. And that is not our version of let them eat cake. The whole thing concerns me. Police militarization concerns me. People living in a place where people are burning things concerns me. You know,
it saddens me.
It saddens me. But I kind of like being, put it this way. There is not a shortage of talk radio out there talking about this, what's going on, including, you know, Free Talk Live tonight was great. You can go back and listen to the Free Talk Live archive at freetalklive.com. They did a lot on the topic. Like, they were on the air when the news broke and they were watching a live feed. I was watching the live feed too. And from some
citizen, I was watching The Walking Dead
from citizen journalism. Yeah, citizen journalists. Yeah, you're watching The Walking Dead. You know, the thing is, It's bad to bury your head in the sand and not know what's going on, but it's also bad to like plug into it so much to breaking news that it just fries your limbic system and your
renal, it burns you out, man.
Yeah, and I like to find balance with that stuff. I like to know what new tyrannies are happening in the world, but I don't like to dwell on them. And this show's a little different than other shows, so we're not going to change the world or tell anything new about, you know.
We're just going to offer a different perspective, that's all.
Yeah, I remember I was making this movie, DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, in 2001. I was making it. I was in New York City 3 weeks after 9/11. I mean, the World Trade Center was still literally was a smoking crater with smoke coming out of it when I was there in New York City. And I'm not saying, like, I'm bad. I'm tough because I'm an embedded reporter who went, like, you know, by then the only threat on the ground was police on every corner. But, you know, most people wouldn't rush into a zone like that to do anything other than, like, gather the loved ones or, you know, be the news on the ground telling the story. And I was there telling a different story that I'd planned to be there to tell before the thing happened. And I debated going, but I went anyway. And it was pretty bizarre being there, man. But, yeah.
It's kind of weird how you remember. Like, I still remember where I was and what I was doing at that exact moment when all that stuff went down. And that's, like, one of the few times in my life that I can say that I actually remember.
Yeah, I was asleep, man. My my AA sponsor at the time, I woke up and there were three messages from him and three messages from other people saying, like, are you watching TV? Turn on TV. Something horrible's happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, before I even called him back, I turned on TV and I was like, oh, my God. And, you know, my... And I wasn't even very politically aware then. You know, I knew I didn't cover the, I knew I didn't trust the government, but my initial reaction was like, oh my God, that's horrible. All those people died. And then my immediate reaction after that was, this is going to make it harder to live in America because of the government. Like, I didn't even read about the government. I wasn't aware of the government on a daily basis then, but I've intuitively known my whole life. And, like, that was my second thought. Like, this isn't going to end well for America, you know?
Yeah, so you were much farther ahead of me. I mean, I was Mr. Conservative, whatever, and political junkie,
news junkie. You wanted to go blow the Middle East off the map, didn't you?
You know, I am ashamed to admit, but that was my first thought. That was when I was still in that nationalistic mode. And I was like, how dare they? You know, I bought the...
You wanted to nuke the Middle East, huh?
Yeah. Well,
now, let me ask you this. Like, I've never asked a conservative or anyone that was a conservative at that time. I know a lot of them wanted to nuke the Middle East. Israel's in the Middle East. You would be nuking Israel.
Well, yeah. Let me just say that even back then and to this day, I don't condone the actions of the state of Israel.
Yeah.
So, you know, give or take, I don't know what that means, but yeah, I was kind of blinded by a lot of the patriotic nonsense. It took me a couple of years to actually see the result of what happened and what came down the pike. You know, by the time I started listening to Michael Badnarik and Ron Paul, and then I started to see, wow, okay, so yeah, maybe we
Ron
don't need
Paul
to just-
predicted that on the floor of Congress like a year before it happened, didn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. There was a few people that had said that.
There's footage of that.
It's interesting because I don't know if I've ever told this story on the air, even on my old podcast, but I used to work for a group that was a labor group, and I'll finish the story up in the next segment. It's quite interesting.
All right. Stick around for an interesting story on the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
So Chandler has an interesting story.
Yeah. Okay. So back in, I believe it was 97, I was working for the main labor group, yada, yada, yada. Ew. I don't remember the whole title. Yeah. It was basically one of those, what do you call them? Make work jobs.
Yeah. Dig a hole and fill it in. The government pays you.
Yeah, yeah. I went into an office, and it was subsidized by the state.
Yeah, I got to say, that does not happen in the private sector.
No, it really doesn't. And, you know, I had to collate paperwork and put it together, whatever. But they had this pamphlet, and I remember it to this day. It was a picture of the World Trade Centers, and it was with a target reticle, whatever you call it, target sight on one of the towers. And it was talking about terrorism and all this. And this was back in 97 before, you know, the World Trade Center attacks. Although people forget that 93, there was an attack on the World Trade Center orchestrated by the FBI.
Well, hang on a sec.
Okay. Helped, aided by agents of the FBI. It was a sting operation. And they...
Yeah, wasn't it more of a they let it happen than made it happen?
They let it happen instead of making it happen. Yes. But they were responsible nonetheless. And that tends to get glossed over. But
that was not planes being flown into a building. It was a van full of explosives, which is kind of weird because that's a plot line from the heroes in a Fight Club. And I'm kind of like, really? They let you do that on a major movie? That's weird.
Well, if you look at the X-Files movie, the first one that was actually good, not the garbage one that came out after, that was a plot line in it too. They the terrorists or whatever blew up a federal building.
No,
and it
but
was basically
there's a difference. In Fight Club, it's the heroes. It's not the bad guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Heroes, bad guys, it's all a matter of perspective.
No, it's... you know, there's always kind of this Hollywood thing of like crime can't pay, although that doesn't really exist in movies anymore. So,
no,
yeah,
no. So I don't know. It always struck me as weird. It just kind of weird. I remember when 9/11 happened, that was one of the things I remembered was reading, cause I actually read this pamphlet, you know, I didn't have to do much work. So I sat down and read this.
So your job was reading whatever you wanted.
Yeah, you know, we were supposed to organize files, and it was the most ridiculous thing ever. If there was one thing that made me appreciate the private sector market, that job was definitely one of them. But I don't know, it just seemed weird that I don't want to say this was all planned and get all conspiratorial, but they were aware of the political environment. The need for crises, the need for pitting one group against the other, very, very far back, much before.
Is this in 90? What year was this?
This was 97.
And Clinton was president, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Clinton was, Clinton is what really caused the militia movement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was a reaction to him.
Well, you know, he came out and said that it was people like Rush Limbaugh and the conservative talk radio that were fostering the domestic terrorism. See, when people think about domestic terrorism, they have very short-term memories. They think of the last 10 years, you know. That movement has been around for quite some time, and they have been very vocal. You know, they used to be on shortwave radio.
Yeah, they still are.
And newsletters. I know people. Yeah,
Alex Jones
understand.
Is on several shortwave stations.
Yeah, there's a lot of Patriot shows that are still running on shortwave, and that's great. I think, I have a shortwave radio in my basement.
Do you have a receiver or a transmitter?
A receiver.
Yeah, I want a transmitter.
Yeah, well, I have a friend who was in the military, and his specialty was ham radio operation and all that, and he's really into radio stuff, so he's quite knowledgeable in that. Shortwave transmissions, ham radio, all that stuff. He kind of... Before I hooked up with you and got into the whole broadcasting thing, he kind of piqued my interest in that. And I also had another friend who did Morse code, which was very interesting. There's a whole culture behind that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, the state's lame, and they promote crises, and they pit people. And one of the things, like, I don't want to cover the current news or whatever, but, you know, we've been hearing about race wars and all that stuff for years and years and years. And this whole Ferguson thing, it plays right into the state's hands. You know, they want to pit people against each other. Instead of uniting people, their goal is to divide people.
That's your opinion.
Well, you know,
I don't disagree. I just like to,
it is my,
you know,
opinion.
I like to preface things like that with its opinion, because it kind of separates you from a lot of talk radio where they state opinion is fact. And that's kind of a staple of talk radio. And I agree with you that that is an agenda of a lot of government agencies, is they want unrest. They don't want peace. But you know, with specific examples or specific agencies, I would like to say it's our opinion. Backed by strong evidence, which is different than proof.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not even singling out any specific agency. I'm just the idea of the state in particular. They don't seek to unite people.
Yeah,
because there's not as much power and influence for them when people are united with a common cause. I want to unite people. The anarcho, we've talked a lot about the anarcho-socialists and the anarcho-communists and the Minstaters and the anarcho-capitalists and all these various groups. And to me, we all have common ground somewhere. It's just a matter of identifying it. We may disagree on a lot of things, and some of them are quite hard for the other groups to swallow. But we all have common ground, and I think if we acknowledge that, at least we can move forward. And I don't think a lot of people like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was actually a suggestion by the author Robert Anton Wilson in the, I believe it was the 70s, that in California, he said, and this was a political idea, you know, not a politics or stupid idea like we have, but his idea was basically that if all of the gun owners in California started a political party with all the pot smokers in California, they would have a large majority. I mean, like if you took all the pot smokers in California and all the gun owners in California, that would be a party that would be like 83% of the population. They could win every single election.
Yeah,
and
that's an interesting
he proposed doing that. And I think he was kind of joking. He said that, you know, called the guns and dope party. And he also, I mean, I know he was kidding, because he also said he wanted to replace like 1/3 of Congress with ostriches, because they would do a better job, but which they would. But, you know, it wasn't a real like political action committee or anything. But And that basically inspired the movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, which I produced with Nima Vidadi. And it's a good point though. You know, they want people fighting over, they want people fighting with each other, not with the state. Like, you know, around the country right now, a lot of police departments are really nervous because this is different than when people were wanting to riot because of the guy in Florida who shot the unarmed black kid. What was that guy? What are those people's names?
Oh, Trayvon Martin.
Yeah. Yeah. And Zimmerman who shot him. You know, there were riots and there was unrest over that, but it was basically, you know, largely black people against random white targets. Tonight it's more like, you know, people are going after the state. People are, you know, two police cars were torched in Ferguson, and the government would much rather have blacks and whites fighting or weed smokers and gun owners fighting than have any of them turn their heads 45 degrees and go, wait, it's all their fault. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't look at the man behind the curtain, you know, fight amongst yourselves. And it just serves to expand their power. You know, oh, there's a crisis, so we need to expand control. We need to impose this, justify this police state that we've tried to impose.
Yeah.
And it's all ridiculous because, you know, I guess I was talking to you earlier about The Walking Dead. And I'm not a zombie fan, so it's kind of interesting that I even watched that show. But the people put aside their differences in that show to survive, to not only to survive, but to find someplace they can call home. And I think there's an example to be taken from that. You know, we're under constant pressures from the state and the governments of the world and the military industrial complex. You can name them all, you know, whatever. But when we're under that constant pressure and we're under that constant stimulation of the limbic system to fear, 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 we tend to overlook our similarities, and we tend to not bond with people of different opinions to serve a common goal. And I think that's exactly what they want.
Yeah.
So look past that all, you know, don't be so, I mean, I'm not one to tell people what to do, but I try not to be so rash and judge people. Everyone has qualities that are admirable. And I think if we focus more on that, you know, community-based, kind of what we were going back to earlier, we can affect a lot more change. You know, I don't understand, like, I understand the frustrations of people in these communities that are rioting because, you know, one of their own was killed by the state and all that. But I don't understand how rioting and torching things is going to do anything but serve their purposes, the purposes of the state, you know?
Yep. Although
it just saddens me.
It doesn't serve the purposes of all of the state. You know, it serves the purposes of the people in the power in the state, the people making the decisions, not necessarily the people on the front lines. There was citizen video tonight being shot from in front of the courthouse live streaming, and there were like 27,000 people watching this one stream. And it was, you know, I was watching it from 10 minutes before they announced the verdict till they announced it. And they didn't even like announce it on the steps or anything. It was, you know, which I think people were waiting for. It was like, you know, people were looking at their cell phones and it was announced, you know, by the news and they knew about it. And, you know, people were pretty peaceful for a while, but then they started, then a line of policemen in riot gear with shields came out and stood there. And it was like, you know, it was like 40 cops and like 500 civilians. And
yeah,
I would not want to have been one of those cops. I'm not saying thank you for your service and praise you and you're doing wonderful things. And, you know, I basically will point out that the crowd was pretty peaceful until they trotted out the target of your hate kind of thing, you know, and people started throwing bottles at them. And then whoever was filming it left. So, and I don't blame them. So I don't know what happened after that. But yeah, man, I wouldn't want to stand there outnumbered 10 to 1 by people who want you, I don't know if they want you dead, all of them, but, you know, who really don't like you and they're really angry.
Yeah.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. My name is Michael W. Dean, and we got Chandler St. Pierre on the other end of the tubes. Are you there, Chandler? Yeah. Chandler?
I'm here.
You're here? Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah. All right. That's normally the top of the second hour, but I didn't give it out. It's not required, but it's not a rule, but I feel like I should give it out every show so people know where we're coming from, literally from the Alpha Centauri region. So you got some redemption in the third act there, brother.
Yeah. So again, going back to what we were talking about, activism, political activism, social activism, economic activism. I think that folks would do well to focus more on their similarities. One of the things I've noticed, not just in the Liberty Mission, but in activism in general, in identifying oneself, we tend to focus on what our cause is, what separates us from everyone else. And that's good. I'm not dissing that. That's you definitely want to have an identity and something that singles you out. But when you focus all your energy on how you're different and what you want to do, you may miss the opportunity to connect with somebody who's really cool, who could help you learn, help you grow, help you further your cause. I think that we all have an opportunity to learn something from one another. Even the crazy socialists and the crazy communists, who I disagree with vehemently. I'm not into that sort of thing. But I think they all have something to offer. And I hope that they would listen to me, because I think I have something to offer to them. And I don't believe in the principles. And I don't even want to say the state. I think there are a lot of groups out there, whether they're state or private, that are very powerful and have a lot of resources. And they don't wish people to dialogue. They don't wish people to connect. They hate the idea of the Freedom Fiends broadcasting live and worldwide, all over the radio and the internet. They don't like these contrast of ideas, because people might say, hey, I heard these guys the other day and they have some good points, and maybe I should check that out and kind of expand on that sort of thing.
Yeah. And Free Talk Live. We're not the only show. I gotta say, I really like Free Talk Live. And I was really honored today when Free Talk Live did kind of an extended segment for about 3 minutes of pitching that it's good for people to donate money to Free Talk Live, and explaining and enumerating all the things they do with donations that are related to reaching more people. And, at one point they said something like, and we're the only radio show doing this. We're the only show out there. Well, except for the Freedom Fiends. The Freedom Fiends do it too. You can support them if you want. They're not on as many stations, but we like them. And Ian said, I like them a lot. And I was like, thanks, man. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And, there's other people who aren't even on radio who say, I'm the only person on radio talking about a voluntary society. And it's like, that guy's not even on radio. But Ian Freeman is on a lot of radio. And Ian and Mark have built the path that did not exist before, of voluntarist radio, of, hey, let's not just get government so small we can drown in a bathroom. How about government that's so small, as Davy Barker says, that it is theorized about by particle physicists?
Yeah, I like that. And I think as the dialogue continues, as innovation continues through the private sector and the market, we'll see these ideas spread further and further. And I think that's what's really going to advance humanity. We need a path to peace. Like you've said many times, we're not pacifists. We believe in self-defense. But
I'm packing right now.
So
I'm in my home with the door locked. I have a gun on me, a gun next to me, and a loaded rifle, you know, six steps away.
Imagine that. So do I.
All right,
so,
man.
So, yeah, man. Worms.
So, Worms, happy birthday, Chandler. It's been great doing a show with you on your birthday.
It's been awesome being here, man. I appreciate it.
Stick around so we can have the real show, the secret one, afterwards.
Take care, everyone.
The Bavarian Gulch, where we centrally plan the non-centrally planned liberty movement.
I love it.
All right. Worms. Give me some effects there, Chandler.
Worms. Good night, everyone.